Pleasure to be with you here this afternoon. We're here at the Take Back America Conference. You will hear a noise in the background all day long. There are thousands of people here. As I speak, Robert Redford is behind me about 50 feet, giving a little talk to reporters. We've met, you name it, they're here today. Harry Reid, former Senator Gary Hart just walked by a minute ago. Katrina VanderHeuvel was by just a few minutes ago. And it's a great place to be. If you're a liberal Democrat today, let me tell you that. And we've got lots of good interviews coming up. It's going to be a rather unusual show. I do want to tell everybody that, of course, we're part of the Head On Radio Network now, as you well know. If you call the program today, we have a different number to call because we are doing the show remote, live here in Washington. Call 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366, and that's of course the Head On Radio Network number. And I'm fortunate enough to have Bruce Burt standing right beside me doing the engineering on the program today. You see, what you folks don't understand is when Guy goes on the road being check light like I am, having to set up things other than setting up the laptop and the configuration and everything else we've got here, I'm out of luck. So I'm very fortunate to have Bob in the studio, Bob Kincaid, back in Beckley, taking care of the engineering today. And we've got Bruce right here producing the show. And we're having a great time here. We're going to have any moment now Mike Tomasky, who's editor-in-chief of the American Prospect .org, and he's going to be here and talk to us. Excellent guest. We've had him on once before. I tell you what, Bruce just handed me a bumper sticker. That's the best doggone bumper sticker I think I've ever seen. And it says there are two kinds of Bush supporters, millionaires and fools. And you've got to love that one. You've got to love it. And if you'd like a bumper sticker like that, just give them a call at 1-800-386-5846. 386-5846 on the back end of an 800 number. And I'm sure a lot of you want to have that. I know I'm going to put that on my modest vehicle any of these days now. We're looking for Mike Tomasky to show up any minute now. I'm sure he'll be here in just a couple. We told him to hang on until about five after, and he'll be along with us. But what an exciting place to be today. I'm telling you, it really is a very, very exciting place. I see Mike strolling across the carpet right now, ready to sit down. And It's a pleasure. We've had Mike on a couple of times, I think, on the program. In fact, once fairly recently. Mike Tomasky, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us today.
Thanks, Guy. Real pleasure.
I don't have to tell a lot of the listeners, they already know this, that I enjoy your work so very, very much. I really do. We're on the same wavelength on a lot of things. Some things we're not, but we're kind of liberal bent, and that's the way it is with, as they always say, trying to herd a bunch of ducks. And there's certainly a lot of ducks in this room today. Everything from soup to nuts on the liberal side of the aisle, on the left side of the aisle. People here from the far, far right, people from the center. And just as a historical sideline for you folks that are listening, this is the place that you all remember that scene where Ronald Reagan got shot so many years ago, and James Brady happened right here out front of this hotel. So that's where we're at, in case you're wondering. Mike, I suppose you're going to be here all day today and all day tomorrow and soak all of this in.
Well, I do have a job, you know, that I have to go.
Oh, they're really making you do that this week?
Yeah, I'm afraid they are. Campaign for America's Future chose a bad week for me to spend all my time up here. But I'll be here today and tomorrow for a little while, sure.
How you print a major article just about every week?
Yeah, more or less. You're being a little kind to me. But
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll say every 7.5 work days or somewhere in the neighborhood. Not enough, by the way. You need to do more. But
that's what my mom tells me.
Yeah. Well, do you spend, as your job, I just want to give a little background to people who are listening and find it interesting in what you do. Do you spend all day every day? You don't spend all day every day just writing.
No, I spend a lot more of my time editing.
More time editing.
And that takes a lot of time.
How many other writers do you have?
We've got about 6 writers on staff, and then a whole herd of 15, 20, 25 people who are pretty regular contributors.
And you have to watch the contributors closer than your regular writers as far as editing is concerned?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. Which group am I going to get more mad at me?
I'll probably start joining that group pretty soon. I'll send you some stuff for a review, and we'll see what happens. I got a chance to talk to Mike before the show started today, and I told him something I wanted to ask him about today. Is we have this ongoing discussion happening in the party now, as you know, the battle, if you will, between Rahm Emanuel and Howard Dean, and I hope it doesn't do anything towards separating the party any more than it is. Of course, we're already factionalized 100 different ways, but how do you see that whole thing shaking out? Who's going to win that fight?
Depends on what happens in November, I think. What's basically happening is this, right? Howard Dean has put away a lot of the money that's been raised by the Democratic National Committee. I guess you're going to know all this, but
sure.
He's put away a lot of the money raised by the DNC to spend it on long-term organizing of the party in all 50 states. So he's hired organizers in places. Rahm Emanuel looks at the map and says, why are you hiring people in Oklahoma, North Dakota, and Idaho, and all these states where we can't win anything in 2006? Dean says, I'm trying to build the party in the long term. Rahm Emanuel says, we have to win now, and we have to put our resources into races where we can win now. They both have points, you know. So it'll just depend on, if the Democrats win in November, everybody will be happy. If they lose, there'll be finger-pointing, and I think a lot of the fingers are going to get pointed at Dean.
Well, it's been a long time since I've gotten into nursery rhymes, but isn't this somewhat like, the Three Little Pigs story?
Yeah.
And Rahm's wanting to build a house of straw.
Yeah.
And Howard's wanting to do it brick by brick from the bottom up.
Right.
I'm a brick guy.
Yeah.
I really am. And I think for too long we've ceded territory in the country to the conservatives and let them run over us like a big tank and just given it up for dead. And I've said that we need to have maybe we need to have our sprinters out in front and our long distance runners doing the job too.
Yeah. No, they have to do both, obviously. They have limited resources. So I basically agree with you. The only problem with our theory is that if we wake up on November 8th and the Democrats are 4 seats short of having taken back the House of Representatives, and Emanuel and his backers can make a credible argument that if they'd gotten that in those 4 races, they lost because of a lack of money, and that if they'd gotten more money from the DNC, they could have pulled out those races, and gotten a majority in the House, then what's our answer? I mean, it's a tough question.
There goes our bricks. They'll be taking away our bricks and mortar, and I would hate to see that happen. I suppose this fight is, in fact, it wouldn't be a normal election season if it wasn't for, you know, some big kind of a squabble going on. We wouldn't know how to act. It's funny, when we walked in here this morning, were you here early this morning?
No, just okay. This afternoon.
None of the organizers here right now. It was mass confusion here this morning. It was mass confusion. And as soon as I walked into the place, as soon as I walked in this morning, I looked around and I said, you know, you can tell this is no Republican deal going on. Because every I would have been dotted, every T would have been crossed, and everybody would have been sitting with their suit and tie in perfect. But that's how it is with us.
And it would have been at the St. Regis.
Yes, I think you're right. Your offices are located close by here somewhere?
Yeah, I just walked up. About a 10-minute walk away.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Have you always lived in Washington?
No. I was born and raised in West Virginia. Then I lived in New York City for about 20 years and moved down here 2.5 years ago.
Ah, really? I've said for a long time, and I'm wandering off the subject here, but I love the city. I love Washington, and the majesty of it, and the dichotomy that's here is amazing. I'd love to come and live here for just a couple of years.
Yeah. I know, it's a great place, and believe me, it's a little better when you can look at the White House and feel proud.
Yeah, I stood there last night with a tear in my eye, looking at that beautiful structure and seeing how it's been kind of infested, a place that we promised that we'd have the dignity brought back to, and I think just the opposite has happened. Yeah, it got a stain on it, and that was a bad choice of words.
After 2001.
Yeah, but thank God. You know, a lot of things have happened, but thank God there's been no sex in the White House. Everybody's heard that. And I see one of our listeners is saying, tell your guest West Virginia says hello, and I happen to know this particular listener is from Beckley.
That's great.
Beckley, West Virginia. So,
Not by part of the state, but we're all one.
Almost heaven. What part of the state are you from?
Morgantown.
Morgantown. Are you a WVA guy?
Sure.
Morgantown's a wonderful town. I've been there a couple of different times. Being an Ohio State Buckeye,
I was reading the website yesterday. Ohio State was number one, and West Virginia was number six picked for this fall. So maybe we'll have a chance to play each other in January.
Not a good thing for us, though. That's a kiss of death, having that on you starting out, usually. We're having this big to-do here today and tomorrow and Wednesday, and there are going to be several thousand people here. And as you know and I know, there are at least 50 different groups here, all promoting their agendas. Do you think our tent, something I think about a lot, do you think our tent is too big?
No.
And let me break it down a little further. I don't want to put you on the spot with that. I've been saying for a long time it'd be nice if we could have our big tent, but if we could have a few little tents along the edge of our tent and tell a few of our groups, you guys hang in here until we win this thing, and then just take the other step in, and we'll, you know, we can't beat on your agenda hard this year, but.
Yeah, well, and I think that's another way of saying that. I agree with you. Another way of saying that is that the tent's actually too small, because there are Democrats in red states, elected officials and people who work for them, who've kind of told me at different times, you know, we have a hard time because we can't even run as a Democrat. We have to wink at voters and say we're not really a Democrat like those Democrats on the coast. And so they really have to distance themselves from the party. So I think you can make an argument, right, that the party has to be bigger so that in places, you know, not deep red places like Idaho, but a state like Montana, which has a progressive tradition in some way, and in a state like, Missouri, in a state like Ohio, and states like that that could swing into the blue column, I think that, you know, there probably needs to be more leeway for candidates who run out there, not to have to hit, you know, every issue on the agenda list.
I'd never be a successful politician. I used to be in politics, but I'd never get very far up the food chain because, let's talk about Bob Byrd.
Yeah.
A couple of votes he's had lately.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's up for re-election, and, you know, he's afraid, and the guy he's running against, a guy from my hometown named John Racy, he has a lot of money, Now, Racy hasn't, as I understand it, spent most of his time in the state in recent years. He spent most of his time in Florida. But, you know, Byrd, he's a Democrat running for re-election in a red state. I think he's been vindicated by the war, but, you know, the votes you're referring to, he voted for, what was it? He voted for
the gay marriage thing.
Yeah. I think you have to do that in West Virginia. I mean, look, Brian Schweitzer is a big hero in these parts. He's a big progressive hero. But in 2004, when he was running for governor, there was a gay marriage ban on the ballot in Montana, and he supported it.
Yeah. Well, that's, I don't know. I'm too much of a purist, and I you know, we've got one of our senators. I live in the state of Florida, mm-hmm. and you know, Bill Nelson. He's one of those winking and nod guys. He'll look at the guys. Yeah, I know I'm a Democrat, but really, really and truly, guys, and. Yeah. He won't talk to me for that reason. Uh-huh. I've said that, and I've told him that. I couldn't be that kind of a politician, but
yeah.
I guess that's why they call it politics. I don't know. What do you think our luck's going to be this year? How do you see the outcome so far? I think we don't necessarily have a great chance for the Senate, but maybe the House. How do you feel about the whole thing?
Yeah, I basically agree with that. I mean, the Senate's really tough. You know, you've got to change over six seats. But the House is not as tough. But even so, you know, Democrats have to win something like 80% of the contested races because of the way delay and those people drawing the districts. So, you know, it's a high wall to climb. It's a high wall to climb. I think, you know, it's possible, but... And it looks great now, but we don't know what's going to happen between now and November. I mean, let me put it this way. Between June of 2005 and November of 2005, Katrina happened. That changed politics quite a lot. I don't know if anything that dramatic will happen this year, but, you know, we can't predict.
And incumbency's a tough mountain to climb.
Tough, yeah.
It really is. Mike, any big articles coming up this week? You got one? You just had one, middle of last week come out?
Yeah.
So I do keep track of you.
Okay.
What are you working on now?
Well, I'm basically working on editing right now. We're finishing up our July issue. We're going to send it to press tomorrow night. And got a good cover story about the cost of the Iraq War. And got a few other, he wins, folks. And and believe me, you'll win.
I have a question for you. And since you've done an article on it, you're probably a little more well-versed than I am. Is it true, in fact, that the costs are actually going up, the costs per month are actually increasing dramatically?
Oh, yeah, they are increasing. And the official cost that Congress has officially appropriated as war expense is only about a third of the real story, because all they're appropriating under the name of war expenses is, you know, actual expenses of war fighting, you know, taking care of wounded soldiers, taking care of people once they're veterans and come back, you know, costs of replacing material that's used up in the war. All these kind of costs aren't counted in the official numbers. The official number is astronomical. It's going to be more than $1 trillion, and $1 trillion is that's a million.
Wow. I hope something can be done about that. That's part of what this whole thing's about. I think if you took a vote in this building right now, whether or not we should end the war and bring guys home within a month, or sooner, you'd probably have an overwhelming victory.
Yeah.
Mike, I thank you so much for being on the program today. I really appreciate it. All of our listeners are very responsive to what you do. We hear about it all the time. Every time we have you on, we get a big response from them about it, and I just thank you for taking time to stop on the Guy James Show today. And I hate to use that old tired cliche, keep up the good work, but you do fantastic work. And your website, I've got it right, is prospect.org. It's that simple.
Prospect.org.
You can go find, for those of you newbies that happen to be on today, you can find some of the finest political writings that you will find anywhere right there on that website. I promise you that. I really do. And you know I never lead you astray. Mike, thanks very much.
Thank you, Guy. I appreciate it.
Mike Domasky from prospect.org. I'll tell you what. I know most of you know that site very, very well. And I always read everything. I don't disagree with everything, but like you said, the editing and all that. I'm going to say one more question for you. And so a guy does want to contribute to your thing. He sends it to you, And so the article comes across your desk, and you look at it, and you either laugh real loud and throw it in the circular file, or you think, well, you know, maybe with a little time and effort, we can polish the stone up a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. We keep a little list of things that we've covered recently, things we haven't covered, things we want to get to. And, you know, if it fits in one of those second two categories, then and seems like it's written in English, then we'll take a look at it.
All right. Well, he'd have my English thing might be a problem, not being an English major. Mike, thanks a lot. Thanks for being on the program. I'm going to write something really great. You know, you've read some of my articles, folks. I'll send it over there, and we'll just see. Like my freshman English teacher, he wrote back my first thesis that I thought was a masterpiece and looked like somebody bled to death on it, you know? You remember papers like that in school? yeah. What are we coming up on? 18 minutes now. 18 minutes after the hour here, and we are at the Take Back America Conference right now in Washington, D.C. Mike Tomasky was our guest at 3:30, or at 3 o'clock, rather. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 877-443-2366. Different number today, just for today and tomorrow only, for the Head On Radio Network, 877-443-2366. And we're going to have Cliff Schechter come on. He's a Democratic pollster coming up at 3:30. So he'll be dropping by in just a couple of moments or so. We have that to look forward to. I'll tell you what, this is a hustling, bustling place right now. It really is. And I got to tell you, I did get a chance to talk to Mike Tomasky a little bit before the program today. And the guys just, sometimes you wonder about someone you interview and you've never met. Today's the first day I've met him in person. What a lovely guy. I mean, just a great guy to talk to and a joy to, got a friendly smile just a very interesting guy and a really great perspective on all things liberal and progressive. And just looking around the room right now, once again, like I said, we see Senator Gary Hart going by. And who else do we see here today? Just many, 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 many people. Coming up about 10 minutes or so, we're going to have Cliff Schechter. He's worked as a political consultant for numerous Democrats. And I would sure love to find out from him. We see this all the time on various talk shows on TV where you see the political strategist show up, you know. And what does one do to become a political strategist? And how successful in the political scene must one be to be a legitimate political strategist? Now, we all know the James Carvilles of the world. Guy's got success written all over him as far as getting people elected. So, political strategist, and Mary Matlin, his wife, also a very successful political strategist. But there are often on these talk shows people that show up as political strategists, especially for the Democrats. As we've said before, if you're a Republican political strategist and you lose a bunch of elections, they take you out back and shoot you. But if you're a Democratic political strategist, they just keep recycling you over and over and over again. And that's one of the things that we're serious about at this conference we're at right now, the Take Back America Conference. This is not only a Take Back America Conference and just take it back from the current regime that's in power here. I think it's also take it back for the people. I think, and I see this, and many people, the people I've talked to today, and it didn't make any difference if they were, newsy celebrities or whatever they were. There's a movement afoot, and I know most of our listeners and everybody on the, almost everybody probably on the Head On Radio Network. There's this feeling that the people this year are going to grasp control of the party and grasp control of the progressive liberal movement. And there I said progressive liberal. And I'm just saying that to be nice today. But we're going to grab control of it and get it back. And back to where it belongs. Not only from the Republicans and this brutal, illegal regime that's in power today, but also from some people within our own party. from people within our own party who think that they know absolutely best and don't always and want to take the party in a different direction than where the people want to go. And that's so often the case. So, you know, let's get it back, folks. The people know best. The people always know best. Not just now and then. The people always know best. When the dust settles, the people have the best ideas. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And that's what this great conference is all about. And I know they had the big Daily Costs convention going on out west somewhere. I forget exactly where it was. But that's the scene this year. That is the main theme running through this conference. About taking back America, not just from the Republican brutal regime that we have in power right now, but also taking it back from people within our own party who think they know what's best all the time and don't necessarily. So where's it going to go? And an interesting topic that we talked about with Mike Tomasky there, who's going to win this battle? And maybe a lot of you might have read about it in Time magazine this past week. It's something we've talked about. I almost felt like I wrote that article. I did not, but this is a battle that's going on within the party right now with Rahm Emanuel. Is he right? Is he right to spend the money sparingly in just certain battleground states only and try and win control that way? And as we did liken it to the old Three Little Pigs scenario, he's going to make a house that you can huff and puff and blow the house down. Or is Howard Dean going to have his way and build that house of brick with a great foundation and keep it going? It's hard to say what's going to happen, but I know I have my thoughts on it, and I'm all for that brick house, and I want to build that house and make sure it stands forever. And I know I most definitely go along with Dr. Dean on that plan. That's what I would love to see happen. So we will see. We're coming up to a break here at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back in just a moment or two. Stay tuned.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. Hertenu oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer?
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school. It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't. Ha, 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
We're rocking. We're having a good time here at Take Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. So glad to have you along with us. You know, we arrived in Washington, D.C. yesterday to a gorgeous day. Actually, a spectacular day for Washington, D.C. I've been to Washington many, many times, but this is really the nicest weather ever experienced here. Yesterday, anyway. Today it was raining, and now it's dry. But it seemed like every other time I've ever come here, it's been in the summer. And for some reason, in the summer. Time. This seems like the hottest place that I've ever been, even when it's only 90 or so. And I live in Florida. And in the winter, at least the times I've been here during that season, it's only been around 20 degrees or so. But again, for some strange reason, it seems like the coldest place I've ever been. So much for the weather in Florida, in Washington, D.C. But it was a pleasure to experience such a beautiful day yesterday. And it's turning nice outside again today here. So it's our... It's our pleasure to have with us right now, as previously mentioned, Cliff Schechter. He's worked as a job that I think a lot of you find very interesting, and I'm going to have to pick his brain a little bit about what actually goes on in political consulting. And as you know, many of us talk about this politically. And Cliff, welcome to the Guy James Show.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
It's a good time here at this great conference today.
Yeah.
Political consultants.
Yes.
See them on TV all the time. And strategists. You've heard it said, and just the other day, somebody on the Republican, I forget which one of us said it again, the Republicans, the Democrats, if they consult with several candidates in a row or whatever, or a couple in a row, two or three in a row, and lose the elections, why the Democrats just keep right on hiring them again. In the Republican Party, when it happens, they take them out back and shoot them.
Yeah, why? Part of the Republican philosophy for many different of our nations.
Good answer. So why is that? Is it just because you're on a horse that is more difficult to ride than the Republican horse?
I feel like what probably the reason, I think this is changing, a couple of the big name guys here who certainly got torn apart after the last election, the biggest name that comes up that maybe, you know, your listeners will know is Bob Schrum, I'm not sure, but, you know, worked for seven different presidential candidates, excuse me, and he never won a presidential race, and he kept getting hired. I think that it's more of the systematic nature of the fact that the Democrats controlled Congress and controlled a lot of this town for 40, 50 years and just had a lot of these guys floating around who were used to being hired over and over again because the Democrats were in the majority for so long. And I think that built up these rock-solid relationships, and it got to the point where, you know, I don't want to use the word corrupt, but, you know, it got to the point where you couldn't get fired. You know, it's like you get tenure. It's a dangerous thing, and I'm not saying I'm for it. I mean, hey, if I do a bad job, I expect somebody not to invite me back.
Right.
But that's what happened with, you know, I don't have quite the name of some of those guys, so it wouldn't be an issue anyhow. But those big name guys, that's what I think happened, is that it was sort of like the committees would go to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which, as you know, is a strategy for the congressional races, and then the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee would go and tell people, if you want our support, here's who you have to hire. And it became an institutional thing. And the Republicans didn't have that because they were out of power for so long. I mean, that's just my thoughts on it.
Okay, well, right now, we've talked earlier today with Mike Tomasky over to
American Prospect
about the current fight that's going on about that very issue. We've got Rob Emanuel out. Well, he's done with the interview process now for some time now, but going out and interviewing potential candidates and so forth, and pushing certain strategists and consultants to them, and here, this is how you're going to do it, and you're going to do it my way or the highway,
right.
and been tough about it, really tough about it.
Yeah,
hard nose. Is that some of what you're talking about?
That could be some of what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Well, am I putting him on a spot or not? He might want to.
Listen, I may be a consultant, but as you may know, I'm also a writer now, and I have to think independently, even if it gets a few people upset here and there. So, no, it is that kind of thing. I'm sure that some of that does happen on the Republican side, too. But I think, first of all, obviously, it's laid in front of you when your side's losing. Then you ask the bigger questions. I mean, you know, think of how different 2000 would have been if the popular vote and the electoral vote had correlated, especially you knowing, being a guy from Florida. You know, had certain things not gone on down there, you'd think everybody would have been calling Karl Rove a genius. So I do think it's important to keep that in mind, that sometimes little things can make a big difference. But also, you know, there is a truth to that. There is a truth to the fact that yes, it is some of that. I've heard Rahm Emanuel has done some of that, and I know that there are other Democrats, you know, big-name Democrats that go out and they say, you know, you for to get the money that you want to raise for us to come in full force behind you, you've got to do it our way. And these
can you win for me? And that's the first number one thing on the list. Can you win for me?
Yeah.
And
if you don't have the money, you must have seen the same. I saw that somewhere, written somewhere, an article where it's the "Can you win for me?" At the top of at the top of the list, supposedly the questions he asked. Yeah, you know, the thing is if you're a Democrat, only if you're independently wealthy can you sort of ignore that kind of thing, because you need them to help you raise money.
All right, I'm Joe Smith from Podunk, Kentucky, and I'm going to run for the United States House of Representatives. How do I end up with you as my consultant? I mean, how do you go about it? Let's say Rahm didn't get to me, and I did, or did Rahm definitely get to me?
There's a good chance that he got to you, but you know, if he didn't get to you, the truth of the matter is that I happen to have you picked an interesting state. I worked two different races down in Kentucky where I worked on the ground, so I have a lot of friends. So let's say if somebody's looking for a campaign consultant, you know, they might say, "Who do you know who handles direct mail, or who can give me advice on television or radio, or you know, other things like that?" And you know, then they may throw out my name, and that in a number of occasions. You know, these days I know a number of people from working on different races, because I used to work on the ground in different states. I did a number of those races. So there are more certain states where I get a lot more people than others, just because I know the people there, and they recommend me, and thankfully they can say that I've won some races.
Fascinated with your job. That's how you get started in this. You start out with a campaign somewhere and on the ground, and you get shoved into the state in a campaign and just work your way up through a certain campaign, and your name gets around a little bit, and that's...
I mean, I would say that certainly for me, I didn't come here with the kinds of connections where I could make a phone call, you know, and be at that top advertising firm. You know, most of these places will expect you to go out and sort of show what you can do first in a few campaigns on the ground. So... obviously, there's ways that you can, you know, you can circumvent that if you have certain connections in this town, as we were alluding to earlier. But if you don't, yeah, I'd say that's probably the path I've seen friends travel the most often. First, they've worked on the ground. They've shown that they've got something they've got a knack for, the media, research, you know, policy, whatever it may be. And then they'll come back and work at a firm often, and from there, or start their own firm and advise on something.
Okay. In the last election, where I live, for example, I live on the border of two counties in Florida, Lee and Collier County, Florida, Fort Myers and Naples area, Florida.
Oh, beautiful. My great aunt, great uncle used to live there.
It's a wonderful place to live, but it's redder than red, double red.
Yeah.
Especially the Naples area.
Naples is very red.
So in the last campaign, the Kerry campaign sends a young man down. Maybe that was you a few years back, not you personally, but you.
Right.
And he came into this campaign down here, and we still got our ears pinned back, but showed a remarkable change in number of votes increase. The second and third highest in Lee and Collier County this young man was assigned to that came down and worked for the Kerry campaign. I believe it was second and third in the state of Florida in increase in Democratic votes.
Really? Wow.
Even though we lost that election, is that a big feather in your cap as a potential ladder climber in this business?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it works like many other businesses. It works like there's hype. You know, as there are so many places where it may not all be due to what you did, but you were the guy running the ship there. Those specific counties that you were working and you got the vote up, absolutely. I think you're up next time, and quite likely you're either in a, you know, you may be running a state the next time around, you know? I mean, you just, who knows what you do. Also, off year in between, you may run a congressional race. There's a number of ways for you to get up higher.
So tough, by the way, that where I live, for the first time recently, a friend of mine got elected to a city council seat in a small town. And other than that, in the area that I'm talking about, nada.
No?
No.
Because all your friends are Democrats.
No.
So you can't get any of them elected.
Well, good point.
I'm from New York City, so most of my friends tend to get elected.
Yeah.
We elect a few more Democrats up there.
Whole different ballgame. As a side note, how'd you like to be the consultant for the Catherine Harris campaign right now?
Ironically enough, a friend of mine who I used to debate on Fox News, I was a Democrat and he was a Republican, mm-hmm. and we actually remained friendly as a consultant on that race. And I find it to be hysterical. I've been very polite. I won't say anything, but
he must have been.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing good work. He's trying his best, but from my perspective, oh my,
yeah,
it looks like we'd call that kind of an uphill race. I think you would.
Yeah, that may be straight uphill. It really is.
You know, if you can hold on to some staffers for a week or two, maybe you can turn things around. I'm sorry, I'm being facetious, of course. I know many people have left their employ there a little bit early, but...
yes, and again recently. Superstars in the business. Carvel?
Oh, Carvel? I think, you'd have to say.
Numero uno? Is he...
I think so. Yeah, I mean, look, you know, if everybody remembers the Clinton race. A lot of people don't remember that when Teresa Hines Carey, when her husband was killed, who was a Republican, John Hines, in Pennsylvania, the special election, killed in a plane crash, special election was run by Carville, and that was a much more amazing thing he even pulled off there. He got a guy, Harris Wofford, elected to the Senate, who at one point was down about 70 to 10 or so, 60 to 5. Or Dick Thornburg, the former attorney general, who I think governor of Pennsylvania, and he ran on the health care issue, which... foretold of what they would do, and he ran the race. So it's not even just the presidential race. He ran a couple really unbelievable races.
So he's not going to do it anymore, not domestically.
No. Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's a grind. Some of that work, especially if you're on the ground, it's a grind. So if you can get out of it and do what he does and get on the lecture circuit and go on TV and do all the other fun stuff and get paid lots of money. Yeah, I was trying to think of a nice way to say that.
They have a good gig going, the two of them.
They make some cash, I think, yes.
Do you know them personally?
I don't. I mean, not to say, hey, how are you doing? I've met them both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had James on a show one time, and the first time I called him, I said, this has been several years ago, I said I had a Democratic liberal talk show in Naples, Florida. And he said, are you crazy? in his own intimidable style. A guy like that ends up with a candidate like Clinton. That's in your business. That's got to be like the kid who aspires to be a Mickey Mantle on the New York Yankees team. I mean, he ends up. And by the way, I'm old enough that Mickey Mantle was my hero when I was a little kid. Oh yeah,
I'm a little too young for it, but I'm a New York Yankees fan, born and bred by my dad, who of course was a huge DiMaggio and Mantle fan. So I have it in my blood.
Yeah, well, I was a Mantle fan. Every kid was my age in those days. But it's the superstar, and Carvel ends up with somebody like that of a small state like Arkansas, but. Here's the question. Here's the question for a true political consultant. And you're not a politician.
No.
Clinton was a great candidate.
Oh. he was as good a candidate as you can ever get. Yeah, I mean, obviously there were a few things he did.
Suitcases out back.
Yeah, there was some dirty laundry strewn in different places that caused some trouble. But I mean, in terms of charisma, in terms of understanding how to stay on your message, in terms of just connecting with people, he was absolutely brilliant.
So that's basically the I think that's where I was going with that analogy of the Mickey Mantle deal. That's the case right there with the Yankees meeting up with Mickey Mantle. You got your Carver walking in, who's obviously fabulous at what he does.
Right. I mean, you got to give him credit too. I mean, it was just a perfect marriage.
The perfect storm, if you will.
That's exactly the way I would put it. I mean, to have someone who's such a talented tactician and strategist alongside somebody who was probably the best politician of the last 20, 30 years that I've seen, anyhow. I mean, there's some others coming up now that are very impressive, but...
All right, I have a question for you, too. This is really unfair. I specialize in asking unfair questions.
I just went on a conservative show before yours, so you can ask...
Did you? In this building?
Can you believe it? There are a few mixed in this building, so you can't get...
Security. Security. Wait.
I think he was packing heat behind the desk.
I get a hold of security. You said there's conservative shows here.
So you can be as unfair as you'd like.
I will. I will ask you a very unfair question. Ideology, as a political consultant.
Mm-hmm.
I do what I do, and let me tell you something, and I mean this, I do. I do what I do because I'm a yellow dog, and I do mean yellow dog Democrat. And I believe so strongly in what I do and the ideology of where I come from, the background, where the party comes from. If someone came along tomorrow, and I hope they don't make me really answer this question, because they were going to give you $10 million, or in the case of a certain gentleman, $30 million a year to do talk radio, and we want you to do it from the other side of the aisle. How much does ideology play in the business of what you do?
So what, you're saying you would take the 30 mil?
No, I couldn't. I could not.
I respect
but
that.
But I'm a stubborn. You know, that's me. I'm probably stupid, but
no, I respect that. I'm the same way. I mean, I don't know how many times I've turned to my wife and started laughing and said, you know, if I only didn't have any principles, how wealthy I could get in this town. I mean, there are Democratic consultants who, in their off time, are advising big corporations that are everything, the very antithesis of what you and I believe as Democrats. So, you know, only once did I go to a place where I was advocating for people. I only lasted there about 6-8 weeks. It was some telecommunications companies where I was doing some lobbying, and I said, I can't do this. And so for me, you know, I don't want to say it plays a big role for everybody, because obviously there are plenty of people who say they'll work for the most right-wing Democrat and the most left-wing. For me, as someone who considers myself a strong progressive, you know, I can work for somebody anywhere from the center-left to the left, you know, even the right-centrist candidate, especially if it was in the right district where I felt like they were good on issues that are important to me. But some of the apologist Democrats, you know, who are out there trying to enable the opposition, no. In fact, I've once or twice have been offered to work for one of those candidates and worked for their opponent, who was much more likely to lose in a primary, just because I'm not willing to go with somebody who I think is selling us down the river. But then again, I may be stupid or whatever. I don't want to say stupid. I don't know what word you use for yourself. But I may be like you. And not realize that 30 million a year is a good thing. Maybe I don't realize that sometimes you go and work for those guys.
Well, there's always that mirror in the morning, and it's just always there. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting because as I don't have to tell you that so many people look at political consultants the same look that they look at lawyers.
I knew you were going to say that. They
yeah.
Work for anybody who's got the paycheck.
Yeah. 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 They look at you as a bunch of mercenaries that would, you know, well, that's good to hear.
There are many who are. I don't want to, I would never claim that there aren't a good chunk, but I've got a number of friends who only do it on principle and would not just work for anybody. And I've seen them give up, you know, paychecks, and I've seen them give up, quit races when the person was ridiculous and that kind of thing. So at least some of us are still able to be saved, maybe.
Wow, I like that. Are you working for anybody in particular right now?
No, not Not that I can actually really talk about.
You're doing some writing right now.
I'm doing some writing. I've done some research for some candidates, but that's on a contract where I need to keep it off the record. Let's just say there are statewide races and the races that will make an impact.
Great.
So I am doing some of that, and I'm doing some writing. You know, I write on and off a column for Knight Ritter, I also do some writing online and write for some of the big magazines here in Washington, D.C., some of the liberal magazines like the American Prospect. I know you had Mike Tomasky on earlier, you said, and I've written for that and Washington Monthly and some of those. I do a combination. I'm sort of a consultant, but I like to be a writer, and I even like to do some of the stuff that you like to do. I'd love to be on the other side of the microphone like you are someday, because I really enjoy going on radio shows, and I've done some political. I've gotten paid to do some political analysis on TV, which I love too. So.
Yes, yes. Well, I've enjoyed talking to you because I'm afraid I've never really talked to a political consultant at any great length, and I'm afraid I've suffered with the mercenary view and all that a lot of times, and maybe it is pervasive, and maybe there are a few good guys out there, but it's good to know.
It's okay. I thought all radio talk show hosts did OxyContin, so.
Best line of the day. Well, you can do that, you see. You can do that, and it's obvious to me that if you are a Republican and you live in Palm Beach County, you can do anything you like. You can throw back all the OxyContin you want. You can go vote in the wrong precinct and tell the people that run the election board that the syphilis must have gone to their brain.
That's
you
right.
You can get away with anything
some
you
woman
want
who
to.
Said that.
Some woman,
skinny, skinny.
Some woman. You know, I said the other day.
Sunken eyes. Sorry, I'm getting you in trouble.
I did this horrible story the other day about this woman, and I also mentioned Michelle Malkin writing a story defending this woman, and I said that Michelle was trying to out Coulter, but she wasn't man enough to do it. And so...
she couldn't get her Adam's apple up for the challenge.
No, she couldn't. I shouldn't have brought this up.
I know, I'm a bad guy to do it too, because if you get me... When the column I write for the blog I write for, America Blog, I'm allowed to... I write it every Friday, and it's just called Cliff's Corner. And I'm allowed to be as... Let's just say I'm allowed to be me. There are no constraints on what I write, so I try to make it smart and I try to make it interesting, but at the same time, usually gets posted every Friday, you know, on our time around anywhere between about 4 and 7 o'clock.
AmericaBlog.com?
Yep, and the column is called Cliff's Corner, and this past one I wrote about Ann, and I'm not very kind, I guess is the best thing I could say to you. I let all that stuff where I have to be more polite in other venues, I let that side of me flow, the sarcastic vitriolic. I mean, I have fun with it, I want to make people laugh. But I certainly don't suffer fools there.
I'm afraid, you know, we are internet radio, and we're not bound by any FCC constraints. And so I'm afraid on one of the shows last week that I got just a little bit, you might say, frisky with that subject. Everybody knows how I feel about that, and I think you can tell. AmericaBlog.com, Cliff's Corner. I'm going to check that out. I haven't seen that. I didn't know you were doing the blog there. Your background, you're from New York.
I am from New York, yes.
The city.
Yep, I grew up in the city.
And you got your PhD where? At American University here?
I just did. I mean, I'm not official. I'm writing my dissertation as we speak, but I finished my classes, so that's always a good thing. I did it in American history because I feel as a writer, and I want to do a lot more writing. I want to still keep doing some consulting, but I want to do a lot more writing. You know, the dissertation will be a book, and I want to write many books and write more columns and such. And I feel like having that understanding history is so key to understanding politics. The people that don't understand why, people who are lost and why certain Democrats lose and why Democrats embrace completely moronic positions in certain states that make no sense. Democrats in poor states embracing a state tax cut, you know, or elimination for, you know, what, the few people that have billions of dollars. And, you know, stuff like that, when you read history and you understand when people understood how to use populism and when the progressives understood how to use it and when the Democratic Party did, it can inform you and I think it can help you a lot with realizing the road we need to take back to winning. And so it informs my writing a lot, and that's why I chose. I got into a great program here. It was only 2 years because I already had a master's degree, and I decided, you know, I'm going to try to be a smarter writer.
Is the American history background pretty much what everybody does in your business?
Oh, no, certainly not. I mean, mine obviously is very specifically, I mean, not, you know, I try to learn as much as I can, but it was politically based. It's American political history and recent. But no, a lot of people, you know, don't ever learn that stuff. And that's why I find a lot of them, that's why I chose to do it, because I find them making so many mistakes. They try to make these analogies. It's also great for catching the GOP when they sit around and they say ridiculous things. When Bill O'Reilly starts mouthing off on Malmedy or,
yeah.
You know, I mean, Keith Olbermann, I think, took care of that one quite well.
Right.
But you know, when they start mouthing off on that, or they start trying to compare Iraq to World War II in any way or whatever, no, I just find that knowing your history, there's nothing like it for being able to throw it back in their faces and tell them they don't know what they're talking about.
You're in a great position. The bane of politics to me is your career politician, and you know, so the money and the lobbyists and K Street, it's all on account of there not being term limits, and we've got professional politicians now. Being a historian,
yes,
is there any place in the writing of our founders? We always like to talk about our beloved founders and how they believe. Have you found any evidence at all from our founders that ever thought that there would be professional politicians in this country?
No, I mean, I found evidence. There's evidence that they worried about it, and so they try to do everything they can. They, you know, in the Federalist Papers, they worried about factions and groups having an inordinate amount of influence, especially wealthy aristocrats. What would a name come to mind? Bush or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, having that kind of influence. They did worry about those things, and that's purposely why they tried to set things up in such a way as to prevent that. They couldn't foresee the creation of the party, and certainly the modern party, political party. They thought that they would only create partisanship, and I think, well, we've seen that they had some pretty bright ideas about that. I don't know. I think they worried that there could be some things like this, but I don't think that they ever saw what it could become.
Most of them were in their own day. Maybe most is a wrong term, but there were a lot of aristocrats that were founders of this country. Some anyway, aristocrats. Do you think they've actually dreamed that it was going to be the butcher, baker, and candlestick maker in Washington, D.C. for a term or two and get out and go back home and really represent the people the way, from a people standpoint?
Well, I still think, you know, well, I said that they feared, you know, the real aristocrat, and they did fear the sort of more the aristocrat, the businessman buying office and that kind of thing. But on the other side, it wouldn't be fair, you know. Listen, this was 200 some years ago, and they weren't. Yes, they feared pure democracy too. They did fear the average person. They thought that democratization, as it was known, if you had people that weren't, you know, of the right class voting, who didn't understand and have the right education, and you know, didn't have the proper respect for democracy, that they could end up sending demagogues to office. And one could argue that they may have had some points there in some places, but, you know, I mean, it's still democratization, obviously. Getting more people involved in politics was a good thing. I think they thought that they saw good, well-bred men, you know, for the public good, would come and serve their time and then head back.
Head back home. Cliff, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the program. I want to reserve the right to give you and contact you on. Is your email on your blog?
I actually write this one column, and it's a joint blog of the people, and I'm not the main guy there, so my email is not there. But I will get you my information. Absolutely.
I want to contact you.
Show a lot more.
You're my kind of guy to talk to about this sort of thing. You're real, and I enjoy that. Ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Zecker, if you got a big time campaign, if you're a presidential candidate, to think you can take it to the bank and take it to the finish line, why? Cliff's a guy here. So.
I paid him to say that.
Just in case anybody's listening and isn't thinking about it. Cliff, thanks so much for being on the program. It's been a pleasure having you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure.
And if you will, we'll get the information from you here so we can contact you. We've just got about a minute or so to break, something like that. My producer is telling me. That's right. And I am fortunate enough, I do want to let everybody know, you listen to Head On Radio, Radio Network, here today. Bruce Birch is been kind enough to do the production of the show here this afternoon. And Bob Kincaid back at the home studio taking care of placing the things today of getting everything all lined up. So we're just sitting here doing the talking today, right? All right. Hey, we're going to pause. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a doll.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Quality News Network. The Supreme Court has unanimously ruled that death row inmates scheduled to die from lethal injections can make last-minute claims that the chemicals used are too painful and therefore amount to cruel and unusual punishment in violation of the Eighth Amendment. In a separate 5-3 ruling, the justices also made it easier for condemned inmates to challenge their convictions with new evidence, the court saying that a Tennessee death row inmate can use DNA evidence to try and prove his innocence 20 years after being convicted of murder. Forecasters have issued a hurricane warning for much of Florida's Gulf Coast as Alberto, the first tropical storm of the new hurricane season, continues to strengthen. It's expected to make landfall tomorrow. Coast Guard is continuing to search for survivors from the sinking of a 33-foot pleasure boat last night off Florida's southeast coast. The boat was carrying 9 people, including 4 children, all of whom were wearing life jackets. Squalls from Alberto have reduced visibility for the search crews, but it's still unclear whether the sinking was weather-related. The U.S. military reports that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi lived for 52 minutes after a U.S. warplane bombed his hideout near Baghdad on Friday and that he died of extensive internal injuries consistent with those caused by a bomb blast. President Bush is at Camp David for 2 days of meetings with his top military and civilian war advisors, meetings which will include a video conference with Iraq's commanders. U.S. troop withdrawal is expected to be discussed, especially in the wake of comments yesterday by the top U.S. commander in Baghdad that coalition troops could gradually move out of the country in the coming months. One of the 3 detainees who committed suicide over the weekend at Guantanamo Bay had been cleared for transfer to another country, but it's not clear whether he knew about it. The U.S. military says all 3 men, 2 Saudis and 1 from Yemen, left suicide notes, the contents of which have not been released. The coordinated suicides have sparked renewed calls for the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo to be closed. A new report shows that U.S. spending in Iraq and Afghanistan helped push up global military expenditure last year by 3.5% to $1.12 trillion. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute says the U.S. is responsible for 48% of the world total. The FBI reports that murders, robberies, and aggravated assaults in this country increased last year, spurring an overall rise in violent crime for the first time since 2001. Both critics and proponents of the government's domestic surveillance program were in court today to argue its constitutionality. And an Israeli passenger train carrying 200 people from Tel Aviv to Haifa crashed into a truck at a rail crossing today and derailed, killing at least 5 people and injuring 67. It's 2.5 past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. it'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Daimler Chrysler says it's recalling about 111,000 Jeep Grand Cherokees after receiving reports of overheating and fires in heated seats. Facing the loss of tens of thousands of unionized blue-collar auto jobs in coming years, the head of the United Auto Workers Union is calling for a more collaborative approach to the deep-seated problems, including high health care costs that are facing the U.S. industry. Lehman Brothers says its quarterly earnings jumped 47%, driven by sharp gains in revenue from trading and investment banking. Italian fashion group Fendi SRL is suing Walmart in federal court, accusing the world's largest retailer of selling Fendi knockoffs and passing them off as genuine at its Sam's Club stores. U.S. gas prices remain stable over the past 3 weeks. The latest Lundberg survey shows that the average nationwide price for a gallon of self-serve regular is $2.93. That's where it was on May 19th. The insurance industry says it has settled over 90% of its Hurricane Katrina claims, but consumer advocates say insurers settle numerous of those claims for only a fraction of actual damages. Verizon Wireless plans to launch a wireless service today to let parents check on their children's whereabouts and alerts them when they venture out of bounds. And Discover Financial Services is introducing its first credit card for small businesses, aiming to make it easier for owners and their employees to pay their bills. Light sweet crude oil trading at $70.60 a barrel. The Dow Industrials are down 5. NASDAQ is down 20. And the S&P 500 is off by 4 points. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed, we are back, and pleasure to be back. And as we've mentioned here, in the last hour or so that we've been talking, this is a very exciting place to be at the Take Back America Conference, and also somewhat hectic. So you will hear a lot of background noise while we're here. There are lots of people coming and going. It seems to have subsided a little bit. We're so glad you're all with us today. And I know in this special edition of the Guy James Show, we've got, we've had some great guests with us so far. And we'll continue on with that today and tomorrow. And we will be with you until 5 o'clock, and great surprise for a lot of you. Bruce Birch is going to carry on with the Head On Radio Network today, is going to be on from 5 till 7, so you've got that to look forward to. If you would care to participate in the program, give us a call at a different number today, since we're doing the show remote, 877-443-2366, 877-443-2366, and we'd be glad to have you on. We've got another great guest to talk with now on a subject that I know a lot of you, well, I know this is where your hearts are, and mine's too, if you've got a good brain, and most of my listeners do, better than any show that I know of. An issue that most of you care about, and we got David Bollier with us right now, and David is with an organization called The Commons. And you may or may not have heard of this organization. Commons.org is the
on the commons.
On the commons.org. I got to remember that. I have so much trouble with the Guy James Show. Everybody looks for Guy James Show and misses the Guy James. So on the commons. Tell us a little bit about, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Glad to have you with us. And you, I've been to your website, and I've looked around and done a little bit of research on it. But give us an overall outline of what it is you folks are about.
Well, the commons is a way of talking about all the things that we as citizens own but don't necessarily control. And when you talk about the commons, you're talking about things like the Internet, the national parks, the public libraries, the human genome, the atmosphere. And the problem is
good many of these assets are being privatized in what we also what sometimes call the enclosure of the commons, where something that belongs to all of us is being claimed as a private property right and being basically either marketized or corporatized. So, for example, you have biotech companies claiming they own patents in the in genetic information or the genome, or you have companies claiming that they can own elements of the ocean, the minerals under the sea that should belong to all of us. So when we talk about the commons, we're saying this: we want to reclaim the things that belong to us and make sure that they can be accessible and beneficial to everybody.
Well, we are in the realization of this. We are about a century too late in figuring out a lot of this, are we not?
Traditionally, people have said, well, if you make property rights and then exchange it in the market, that's how progress occurs. And, in fact, a lot of progress does occur that way. But as we've seen on the Internet, a lot of things happen when the market has nothing to do with it. Open source software, lots of social networking software, blogs and wikis and so forth. And to talk about the commons is to say, you know what, there's a whole other thing, set of things that are valuable, that are wealth-creating, that have nothing to do with the market. In fact, the market can sometimes just swoop down and take what we created ourselves and say, we're going to own it, this company's going to own it, and prevent you from using it yourself. So we have a lot of companies like Disney and Mattel, for example, that claim trademarks in something in folk stories or folk characters that used to belong to us all. Disney claims a trademark in Snow White. That used to be a folktale, but they claim that they own it now. And Mattel tries to prevent you from using Barbie dolls in ways they don't approve of. They're trying to control the public meaning of it through trademark law. So these are examples of trying to take what belongs to the commons and privatize it.
All boils down to the buck, as always, and you just follow the money, as they say. The Internet. Let's go with the Internet for a minute. This present movement we got going on with the Internet, with them trying to hijack it, how far do you think it's going to get?
Well, it could succeed. You know, we taxpayers supported the development of the Internet over several decades, and now the telephone and cable companies, some of which declined to take contracts to build the Internet in the first place, the telephone companies didn't want to get into packet switching. They said, forget it, because it would undermine their business plan at the time. Well, now the telephone and the cable company are saying, we want to control the on-ramps to the Internet and start to act like cable TV and decide who's going to have fast access and who's going to have slower access, and we're going to charge a premium for the fast access and so forth. So you're having an attempt to create a bottleneck of access to the Internet in a way to control it. The Internet is sort of infinite. You can have all these different websites, but if Comcast or AT&T can say, well, you're going to have to pay us a premium for your website to be seen at a faster speed, you're starting to undercut the very principle that made the Internet so productive and innovative over two decades.
Yeah, Al Gore's great invention, the Internet. we did a whole show on that recently about that fairy tale. You know that they got away with that in that election.
That's one of those factoid myths that get circulated. And when nobody, even Al Gore didn't claim he invented the Internet.
No.
It was a warped story.
Lee Atwater would have been really proud that they got away with that one. He really would have.
So we shouldn't continue to circulate those same myths.
No. We did a whole program dispelling that entire myth and all what was actually said and what was actually meant and about his association with the Internet. And he was instrumental in getting it going, but certainly never claimed to, and certainly never claimed to be the, never erroneously claimed, by the way, as a side note, to be the inspiration for the love story. I don't know where I went with that, why I went with that. Commons, and you're talking about minerals and everything now.
Well, people don't realize that we as taxpayers own millions and millions of dollars of minerals, of timber, of fresh water. And a lot of companies, like Nestle, is taking hundreds of thousands of gallons from the Great Lakes and putting it into bottled water, all for free. We have foreign mining companies in the West taking lots of minerals on American land for a fraction of value. There's no royalties that are paid. It's $5 an acre. So you have lots of these just patent ripoffs.
$5 an acre.
You can get land, public lands with minerals on them for $5 an acre. The 1872 Mining Act has not been revised since it was enacted under President Ulysses S. Grant's tenure.
The mineral room. I didn't know that it went that cheap. I mean, we've had a problem with the forest, and we've had a problem with the oil rights and the coal.
Western senators repeatedly block any attempt to reform that law because the mining companies just make out like bandits, and there's no fair value to the public. And that's just a microcosm of a lot of ripoffs of other resources that we as citizens and taxpayers own. Federal drug research. We take all the risky, expensive drug research to develop these breakthrough drugs, and then we let the drug companies do a little bit more clinical work to make it make sure it's safe. And then they get exclusive rights and charge monopoly prices back to us for stuff that we financed in the first place. So it's these examples are legion, where taxpayers do the investment and take on the risks, and then it gets privatized.
All right. Also, you're talking about probably something we do here, the media, the FCC.
The airwaves. The airwaves belong to the American people, and they're used for free.
Well, they used to.
By law, they still do. The law has not been enforced adequately, and the government hasn't insisted upon a fair market return to the American people.
We had fair usage of the media up until about 1986 or so, where they really did belong, and everybody that used them had to be fair about it, but they don't have to now. And
it's been deregulated. All these obligations for local programming, for educational programming, for the fairness doctrine, all deregulated. And, you know, those were sort of surrogates for some sort of monetary payment. And we don't even get a monetary payment now.
Is it all monetary? And when it comes to the airwaves, or was there a little political hanky-panky going on there as well?
Well, that's the story, of course.
Yeah.
And, it's you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And we, the public, get left holding the bag. And we're essentially subsidizing wall-to-wall commercial broadcasting.
Certainly. How about, you mentioned the atmosphere. Where does the commons come in on?
Well, one thing that's being talked about is to try to curb pollution is selling rights to pollute. And this has worked in many different arenas of air and water pollution. And it's not such a bad idea to use market incentives to encourage or discourage companies from polluting. Now, the question is, should they get those rights to pollute for free, or should they pay for them? And in other words, should it be grandfathered in, as they call it, to give them the free rights for what they already pollute, or should they have to pay for it? And if they pay for it, doesn't that money belong to us all? Because, of course, don't we all own the sky? A friend of mine named Peter Barnes has written a book called Who Owns the Sky? And his proposal is that we sell the rights to pollute, and that money goes into a trust fund that we all own, sort of like Social Security. And we all get dividends from that trust fund. And this is modeled on what they do in Alaska for oil revenues. They have something called the Alaska Permanent Fund. And a certain slice of royalties goes from state oil revenues, goes into the Alaska Permanent Fund, which is owned by the citizens of Alaska. And every year, every citizen in Alaska gets a dividend of anywhere from $1 to $2,000 from those oil revenues. And so it's in a way of saying, you know what? The oil or the scarce atmosphere, they belong to us all, and we should get benefits from it.
The right to pollute, I'm not sure I understand that. The right to pollute, you're talking about under at least present conditions,
well,
with the EPA and so forth.
There are certain pollutants that they now sell, for example, sulfur dioxide. You have to buy a right to pollute. And the idea is that if you have to pay a high price for that, you'll be encouraged to adopt technologies that will reduce it.
Okay.
So that you're not paying as much. But the point is that money could go into a trust fund that we all have stakes in, sort of like a mutual fund. And that's what I use the analogy of the oil revenues in Alaska. That's the model. So if we were to do that, we would all get dividends from this trust fund because, after all, we all own the sky, or should own the sky. It shouldn't be just the companies that own the sky.
For a moment there, I thought you were suggesting like the mills in Gary, Indiana could open up and start belching that orange smoke into the sky.
Well,
all they want, as long as they paid everybody.
There are some deficiencies to these schemes where the richer companies can afford to do what they damn well please if they can afford the pollution rights. And some of us diehard believers in regulation think that maybe that shouldn't be the criteria for deciding who can pollute or not.
So your company's pretty green. I mean, your organization's pretty green.
Oh, absolutely, because the idea is that the imperial market, too much market activity is what's causing so many of these problems. So let's try to domesticate and harness the market to do the good things it does do while limiting the bad things it does.
Well, let's throw some political ideology in here then. It seems to me, I could be wrong, but it seems to me there's of two major parties in this country. There's one that kind of lets you do anything you want to the mineral rights and the air, and there's another one that at least has put a token effort into maintaining all the things that you want to do. You're here at this conference today, and you know what this conference is. How politically motivated, and perhaps ideologically motivated politically, is your organization?
Well, I think part of the problem with even many liberals is that they don't recognize that the market starts to be a net degrader of the environment unless it's checked. And so let's talk about the proper limits of market activity. Do we want to swallow up every bit of open fields in our communities, or do we want to start to protect it? And let's find the ways to do that. When we start to talk about the commons, we can start to talk about those things that don't belong to the market that we need to protect. And we can do it more forcefully than I think some of the way liberals currently talk about it, where they tend to think that, well, if we build another road or put in another Walmart, we're going to increase the well-being of the community. Well, after a certain while, the market's not going to add more to our progress or well-being. It starts to degrade it.
I should have said something earlier. We are not fettered by the FCC on this program, but you did just say a word that we consider highly obscene on this program, Walmart. we consider that one just about it. Anyway, they've not. I'm sure they're not one of your pet.
No, and they're the direct antithesis of it. In fact, we need to start talking about how localism and diversity can thrive. Part of the problem with Walmart is it shuts down independent local businesses and the diversity of businesses. And any healthy economy needs that diversity. By having just a monoculture of economics in Walmart, you shut down a healthy community for the entire region. So that's why talking about the commons helps us get at that problem.
Oh, how do you answer? How do you answer the neocon conservatives, or most of the neocon conservatives? They would come at you from that, say, hey, you're going to stifle the economy, you're going to stifle jobs, you're going to stifle great economics for this country of progress.
Well, the way you answer it is showing how that money gets sucked out of local circulation and sent to absentee owners and investors. It doesn't develop the ecology of a local region, because it no way can it compete with the kind of exploitative working conditions and wages that Walmart is renowned for through its suppliers. So it's an unfair fight that is supported only through lots of public subsidies and political clout that Walmart brings to bear.
Well, a buck or two put into the political progress, I'm afraid, or political process, I'm afraid, as always is the trouble. We are in the midst of a population boom in this country. I remember, I was just thinking the other day how fascinating it is. I'm much older than you, but when I was in school, eons ago, there were 160 million Americans. And now it's up to nearly 300 million, and it's rising rapidly. And we've got immigration that's coming right along. All of this is going to impact heavily upon what your organization is trying to do. Where is the future of this? Where are we going with it as the population increases? Are we going to be? I guess the question is: are we going to become more aware of this in the future, or are we going to be so saddled with so many people and so many different other issues that we're willing to? And I'm afraid this is what has happened over the years. We're willing to just say, yeah, I know. We'll worry about that someday.
Well, I think that it's going to be forced upon us by Mother Nature herself, unless we begin to take awareness of the commons in global warming, we're not going to have a society. There are certain limits to what nature can absorb of economic activity, and we need to be able to start to talk about that. We're not talking about that.
There's global warming?
Well, I know we have some doubters, even now. Even now. But the nature is not going to listen to those kinds of evasions of the scientific truth. And so we need to start to be aware of this, of the limits of what the market can grow. And start to, that doesn't mean we shut down the economy, because there's all sorts of other ways that human needs can be met without destroying the environment. And indeed, there's lots of market opportunities in creating green products and processes. So that's where the future lies.
Problem being is we live in the United States of America, where too often necessity has been the mother of invention. And living where I live, for example, I live not far from the coast of Florida, not very far at all. And I see the latest figures show that perhaps with the global warming that's going on, perhaps in about 90 years or less, maybe even much less, where I live might be underwater. Then people are going to start to worry. I guess when the condos on the beach are in water and the beach houses are all gone. But it's a shame that the apathy, I guess, what it is.
Well, that radical disconnect is not going to be able to survive too much longer as real life events start to interfere with our daily lives. I think the question is whether we can begin to find new ways of talking about this and get it injected into the political discussions. And that's one reason for this conference. That's one reason for my website, onthecommons.org, to start spreading awareness of this fact.
Onthecommons.org, David Bollier, and is a very comprehensive site, I might say. It's some place that I know a lot of you haven't been that you will enjoy going to, onthecommons.org. Please do visit that site and take a good look. Read all the way through it. You're going to find a lot of great information there. Even some of you who think you are so knowledgeable about this the environment and the issues that you talk about, I think you're going to find some new things there as well. David, thank you so much for being on the program today.
It's been a pleasure,
guys. It's been an interesting discussion and one that's going to go on for a long, long time, I'm sure, and hopefully you'll be doing your part, and we're going to help do your part in solving what a lot of people right now don't think is all that big a problem, but it's coming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Hey, we're going to... I'm desperately looking here at the producer here to find out if we're going to go to a break. I guess we are. We're going to go to a break. All right. I'm going to let them back know back at the studio that we're going to have a break. Yes, indeed, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to refuel, get ready to go here, and stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment or two with more of the Guy James Show.
Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday. And I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine.
Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hello, Bob!
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. Y'all have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I have to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head on.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy.
He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
We're back at the Take Back American Conference, and we're awaiting another one of our guests, one of the co-director of the Campaign for America Future, this great organization launched by 100 prominent Americans to expand the national debate about America's economic future. And I don't know, they're out hunting them down. I'll tell you what, it's hard for us and hard for our guests to keep up with what goes on here right now. Very, very, very difficult to keep up because it's just things are just jumping around here right now. I do mean jumping. So a great number of... Yes, and I've got just a moment or two, and I do mean a moment or two. That's about all I have until Roger comes up. We've got Alan Leishman. Leishman with us, and it's always a good Democrat for the United States Senate. And Alan, tell us about yourself. Where are you running?
I'm running in Maryland for the open seat, Paul Sarbanes.
And I'm running to be the only lifetime teacher in the U.S. Senate. How about that? 53 lawyers, scores of professional politicians.
No kidding.
Isn't that
amazing? Lifetime teacher. Yeah. Well. We don't have enough teachers in prominent positions in this
country.
We sure
don't.
What kind of teaching have you done?
I've been teaching women's history and political history at American University for 32 years. That's a lifetime, guy, isn't it?
Well, I've always said for a long time, and I know people think I'm probably radical on it, but I don't think there's anybody. And my apologies to the physicians and all the people, all that out there. But I don't think there's anybody in the world more important than teachers. And it's been a pet peeve of mine for a long, long time how underpaid people are, and especially in our schools, in our state and local schools. It's just a shame. But you're on the higher level. But I think especially Democrats need to fight. Well, you know what's going on right now, trying to privatize the schools
it's
and so
horrible.
Forth.
Trying to privatize the schools, and they're not. No Child Left Behind is the biggest unfunded mandate in the history of the country. And as a teacher, let me tell you, it shackles our teachers to teach to the test instead of letting our great creative teachers teach. That's why my top priority when the people of Maryland send me to the Senate is reform of education from preschool so kids can get into Head Start, to secondary and primary education, so we let our teachers teach and give them adequate pay and pensions, to college and university, where we restore the value of student aid and student loans. Education's our future, and we're neglecting it. Indeed, we're harming it.
When is your primary?
September 12th.
Whoa.
Late primary.
Yeah, very late primary. Yeah. So in the general, you don't have a whole lot of time to mess around. You guys, is there a later primary in the country than that?
If there is, maybe one or two. Not many.
Wow. And so you're running against Sarbanes.
No, Sarbanes is retiring.
He's retiring.
It's an open seat, one of the few open seats in America. And as I said, I'm running to be the only teacher and the only civil rights expert. I've been in 70 civil rights cases in America as an expert witness, including 6 times, Guy, I went down to Texas to take on Tom DeLay and his destruction of our voting rights.
Tom DeLay destructed our voting rights?
Not right here in River City, you know.
I hadn't heard Mr. DeLay had been involved in any shenanigans of any kind. No.
You won't admit any.
Well, we could spend a couple of days talking about that gentleman, I guess. An open seat. We've got to win 6 seats.
Correct.
What do you think our chances are?
It's going to be difficult. I think there's only one way, though, Democrats take back the Senate. And that is to unite behind candidates of principle, backbone, and courage. You know who the last lifetime teacher in the Senate was? Paul Wellstone of Minnesota. And that's my model. That's who I'm trying to live up to. But if we try to back in without forthrightly stating where we stand on the war, without clearly stating how we're going to get us off this fossil fuel economy that's killing our environment, without forthrightly stating how we're going to bring universal health care to all Americans, then we don't deserve to win and we won't win in the fall.
I don't think a lot of people understood. I know I did. I felt when we lost Paul Wellstone, I thought Paul Wellstone in a lot of ways was the future of the party. I did. Paul Wellstone, that was a monstrous loss. He was a man that I think was taking the party in the right direction.
It's my model, and it's a great model to try to live up to as best I can. And, you know, Guy, even those who don't necessarily agree with everything Paul stood for really miss that kind of voice in the Senate, and that's why
the passion. Knowing that when you open your mouth and say something, you really believe in what you're saying, and you're not doing it for some political reason.
And, you know, as I travel around the state of Maryland, the people want an authentic voice. They don't want political speak. They don't want the consultants and the handlers writing things for people. I have no consultants, no handlers, no hucksters.
How do you feel about term limits?
I'm opposed to term limits.
Opposed to term limits. So
it's unconstitutional
now
for the Congress.
All right, so we're going to elect you, and you're going to stay there like as long as Robert Byrd, if you can.
I'm going to stay there as long as the voters want me there.
All right.
It's in the hands of the voters. But I'm not that young, so I won't be there all that long.
Bobby got a start on you.
He got a little start on me. But, you know, as long as I serve the people, I hope I deserve to stay. That's what we need. You know, Franklin Roosevelt said it way back in the 1930s. We need government to represent the forgotten men and women. And today, Guy, almost all of us are the forgotten men and women, if you're not one of the very privileged few to have the inside track in this administration.
We don't measure progress by how well we take care of those who have too much, but by how well we take care of those who have too little. Franklin Roosevelt. Don't know where that came from. Had a little music jump in on us there all of a sudden, but anyway. Anyway, we're still running along here. Had a tune or two just float across the screen there. Right. Don't want to have them. Anyway, Bruce is here and producing the show today, and I must say under very difficult conditions. Here we are out in the open, just more or less in a big hallway with all the rest of Radio Row. A lot of great guests. Alan, September the 12th, you got a lot of time yet.
That's right.
Do you have a lot of money?
I don't have a lot of money. I have enough money to be competitive. And it's too bad that our politics should become so money-driven. But what I do have is a lot of wonderful young people coming in from all over the country to work on my campaign. Right in front of us is Paul, who came in from Minnesota, the state of Paul Wellstone, to work on the Lichtman campaign. We're knocking on doors. We're dropping lit. We're talking to voters. If hard work and direct voter contact is going to win, we're going to win this campaign, and we're using the Internet. We got written up in campaigns and election for using something called MySpace, reaching out to the 18 to 25-year-old crowd, the crowd that never gets polled, the crowd that never gets represented. We're representing the young people, the future of our country.
Well, that's one of the big problems we have right now is we're not pulling enough young people, and especially our party has not done a very good job in pulling enough young people into it. And I hope, and there is a movement afoot to do that, and I hope we'll pour a lot of resources into that, because that's, you know, where I live in southern Florida.
Yeah.
And of course there's a lot of retired people there. But still, we go to the Democratic Club meetings. In one county or another, and
it's all the gray heads.
We don't see enough young people there.
But we won't see enough young people until we get new leadership. Until we get forthright leadership that speaks from the heart about the only thing that really matters, making government work again for all of us and not the wealthy corporate interests. And that's why I've taken a pledge, by the way. If I get elected in Maryland, Guy, I've taken the Frank Serpico pledge. Remember Frank Serpico?
Yes.
The New York City police detective who wouldn't take bribes. I have pledged to pay my own way. No junkets, no skyboxes, no restaurant meals, no nothing. I'm going to be a different kind of senator, a role model for the young people.
Well, you would be. No junkets. You know, that's one of the...
it's ridiculous, you know. You make plenty of money as a United States senator. Every United States senator can pay their own way. I'm going to start it. And, Guy, it's better to light a single candle than forever curse the darkness of corruption in Washington.
Alan, it's been great to have you with us this afternoon. I really appreciate it. And I wish you a lot of luck in your campaign. Who do you think you're going to end up running against?
Michael Steele, the Republican lieutenant governor of Maryland. And I intend to run against him by wrapping every policy of the Bush administration around him, not letting him run away from the president of his own party, taking the issues to him.
Folks, you would not believe what's walking in front of me right now. You just would not believe what's walking. It's the BushChainGang.org. Mark that down, BushChainGang.org. We have the old-fashioned in the striped prison suits. We've got Dick Cheney. We've got Condoleezza Rice. We've got Rumsfeld there. And Georgie Bush. And they're all chained together with prison chains. I wish we had a net cam on right now for you to see this. This is absolutely hilarious. Anyway, Alan, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. I wish you the best of luck in your campaign. We're going to get your information from you, and we'd like to get you on the program again some of these days when we get back and do our regular program.
And get in depth into the issues and show how we can throw these guys where they belong, this Bush chain gang.
Thank you so much for being on the program. We'll get our assistant over there and get the information from him so we can talk to him again some of these days soon. Don't know where our assistant went. Here we go. Get Alan's information so we can contact him again and get him on the program again. Thank you. You want to remind? Hey, this is quite a sight. I wish you all could have seen this. BushChainGang.org. Yeah, go to this website. They just handed me a bumper sticker. This is a hoot. It really is. Accountability zone. Impeachment. I'm surprised those people got in the building with that. I mean, this is one of the funniest things you ever saw. Really, really, really a funny, funny thing. BushChainGang.org. Take the time to take a look at that. And yeah, they just hand me a little card here from that organization. It says the British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium. You know, it's got all the good Bush lies. Bush lies, you say? No, I didn't say that, did I? No, I couldn't mean it. I do want to remind you once again about this great bumper sticker. And I know a lot of you like good bumper stickers, and I want to let you know, 1-800, it's evolvefish.com, evolvefish.com, 1-800-386-5846, 386-5846, 800. There are two kinds of Bush supporters, millionaires and fools. I like that. I do. I really do. A little levity there, folks. Glad to have all of you along with us today. Hey, we've got a caller on the line. Are we ready to take the call? We've got Dave on line one from California. Hi, Dave. How are you with us?
It's me, Guy, and how are you today?
Well, busier than was it? Well, I won't go into it, but very, very busy. A lot of action taking place here at this enormous conference in Washington.
Yeah, I'm hoping that in your travels there and people coming up, you know, you will be able to somewhat address my main concern, and that's election fraud. I hear so little of it from congressmen, and I'm so convinced that it's it represents largely the end of democracy in our country if they don't do something about it.
Well, Dave, I do want to let you know that coming up from 5 to 7 this evening, Bruce Birch is going to be on, and he's going to be talking about that very issue tonight with a gentleman that you're very well familiar with, Brad Freeman's good friend from Florida that blew the whistle on the entire thing. Clint Curtis is going to be on. Is that right, Bruce? He's going to be on your program tonight. What time? 7:30. 7:30. And Dave, I know you're very familiar with Clint Curtis, and Bruce, we hooked up with Clint here, and Bruce is going to have him on at 7:30 this evening, so I know you'll want to hear that one.
Yeah, well, what I'm hoping is that some senators and some congressmen who just are so quiet on this subject will be forced to take a look at it.
Well, you said the right word, forced. That's the way it's going to have to be. They're not going to willingly go down that road. You know they're not.
So important to this country, if we don't have elections that we can count on, we're going to be stuck with whoever they stick us with.
Obviously. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's just, all of this doesn't mean anything. None of this means anything. This conference, everything we're doing in the political scene, none of it means a damn thing. Unless we can believe that that the results of the election are honest, that's really how it is. So you're right. I mean, this is at the foundation of it all.
And I don't, because I believe they designed those machines. They had Clint Curtis design them just so they could cheat. They won't let them be made honest. They won't let them be made verifiable. They fully intend to do it to us again. And I can't.
Well,
you there?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't imagine that none of the congressmen or senators see this as important enough to think about it, try to do something about it.
Yeah. Well, we hope we can make some progress on that issue. It's, as you know, it's tough sledding. It's tough sledding. But do tune in tonight, Dave, at 7:30, and everybody tune in. It's starting at 5 o'clock, not too long from now. Gee whiz, quarter to 5 already? Is that the truth? Wow, I don't know where the time is going here at the conference. We've got a great Dave, thank you very much for calling
thank
the program today, and do tune in tonight and hear that interview with Clint. He'll have a lot to say, as you know. He always does. We've got a great lineup for you. Our 4:30 didn't make it, Roger Hickey, but tomorrow we've got Susie Turnbull, vice chair of the DNC. We've got Dave Sirota.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again.
I don't know.
Hang up.
Now the operators tell me if you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. I don't know. Maybe don't know what's happening with that. Are we still? Yeah, we're connected. Okay. There's gremlins going on here, folks. Gremlins in the building, and we knew there would be a few. This was an enormous undertaking. An enormous undertaking. Radio Row here. When we arrived this morning, and many of you know the names that were here. We arrived here this morning. Rachel Maddow was here, and of course, Tom Hartman was here. Our good friend Tom Hartman. Tom always does yeoman's duty every day. Long time on the air every day. I don't know how he does it because it's intense. But Tom was here, and who else did we see? I'm trying to think who else we saw. Just everybody that you folks normally listen to on the liberal side of the dial. And it's really great to be here, and I know I've said that over and over again, but this is a most interesting conference. We've got people making a lot of noise off to our left right now with this chain gang. I do wish you could see this. Actually, you can if you go to that website it was talking about, and I don't know what happened to the bumper sticker I had here, but chaingang.org. Anyway, check it out. Where's my notes, the card we had here on the chaingang.org thing? Oh, okay, here we go. Bushchaingang.org. Get over and take a look at that, and you'll see this site that I'm talking about right now. So you don't want to miss out on that. Believe me, you don't want to miss out on that. I kid you not. Let me see. Do I want to take a break here? You bet I do. It's time to do that. And we're going to throw it back to the studio, back to Bob, who is doing yeoman's duty back there today at the studio. So, Bob, we're going to tune it back to you. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You stay right where you are because we've got, oh, about 10 or 12 minutes of great radio left. You come back.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Goofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
The First Amendment reads, "The people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak."
The odds are, the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion makes sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Of the road, it's trying to find me.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Alrighty then, we are back. Got the gremlins all out of the system, I think. Hope so anyway. Bruce is sitting here beside me right now. We've got just a few minutes left in the program. Bruce, you got a lot of good interviews lined up for this evening, don't you?
I certainly do. I certainly do, Bob. Guy, I got to tell you, this is just this is really a fantastic conference. And I'm looking around here, and I'm seeing all these wonderful people walking around and just having a great time. And a bunch of interesting interviews I do have lined up. It sounds like to me, though, that the BushChainGang.org really stole the show today. What do you think about that, Guy?
Oh, absolutely. That is where if we had paid an admission, which we didn't, but if we had, that would have been worth it right there. It would have been worth the price of it. That is quite a sight. I hope you'll stick around and not go anywhere. Bruce has got a great show lined up for you this afternoon. And our last interview today, well, just didn't quite make it. We got stood up on that one, but that's easy to see why around here. I got to hand all the credit in the world to Candy Stroud and Maria Levy, who have put this whole media row together. I don't know how they do it. I really hear Senator Hart walking by once again, Senator Gary Hart walking by, and here's a gentleman right there that could have been president of the United States, I believe, was close to it from Colorado. That's one of those things right there. I think the press did Senator Hart in, been quite a few years ago, but that's just one of those things, one of those political things that there was little problem that took place and the media blew it way out of proportion or brought it to light and the public didn't like it and he dropped out and didn't go anywhere in that. But that's political life for you. That is how it goes. And we're just all sorts of folks walking around here like that many of you would recognize. Who was that actor here was this morning? Robert Redford. That actor. He created quite a presence. You know, I didn't see him coming this morning. Didn't see him at all. He's not a large man at all. In fact, he's not him. No, Beth saw him. Yeah, she went in a conference with him. Is that mic hot over there? Let's put that mic on right over there. Yeah. So you got to go in and see Robert Redford.
Yes,
today.
I did, and I got to ask him some questions, and he was very gracious in answering. And he feels he was talking about the media, how we've lost it, and he feels now that we're getting it back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very confident the grassroots, such as you, will get the media back. So that the people can hear the truth.
You and Robert Redford.
Me and Robert Redford, yes.
Okay, your pal.
Quite great.
Your pal, Robert Redford. Did you get a picture of him?
Yes, I did.
Did you get a picture of you and him together?
No, I did not. He had to, his staff, of course, moved him on to another conference meeting.
This morning it was one of the funniest things I ever saw. It was like a scrum in a rugby match. I saw this pile of people walking down through, and it was just this huge pile of people, and it was just all cameramen, and they were surrounding Redford, and when he moved, they all moved. It was a real hoot. It really was a funny thing to see.
In fact, from that meeting, the Fox News heard my comments, and they also wanted to interview me, too.
Ah, so you were on Fox News.
Yes.
I
don't know if I'll be on the Fox News, but they did interview me.
They
for
did
Fox
interview
News.
Locally here, or
yes,
or,
it's
okay.
The local Fox.
So we have spies amongst us.
Yes, quite.
I actually heard one of our guests said there was a couple of conservative commentators here today. I didn't see Pills anywhere, and I didn't see Hannity anywhere. But my goodness, that's frightening to know they let those people in here. Well, anyway, thanks for
the report.
Okay, we got the report about the Robert Redford sighting a little earlier this morning. I think the ladies all over the world just love Robert Redford. I don't know, but he is a good spokesman, especially for environmental issues. He's been a good spokesman for the party and a good level-headed guy, and he's been involved in politics for a long, long time. So. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the Guy James Show. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Stay tuned for Bruce Birch.
This is the Quality News Network. Florida's Gulf Coast is under a hurricane warning as Alberto, the first tropical storm of the season, has quickly and unexpectedly strengthened. Forecasters are warning the storm threatens to dump heavy rain on the state by tomorrow. At Camp David today, President Bush is meeting with military and civilian national security leaders to discuss future troop levels in Iraq. Top commanders in Iraq are participating through video conference. The meetings continue tomorrow. The U.S. military has released the results of the autopsy of al-Qaeda in Iraq leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who was killed Wednesday. It confirms that he survived the bombing but died about an hour later from massive internal injuries of the blast. Also today, in an online statement, al-Qaeda in Iraq posted the name of the group's new leader. Northeast of Baghdad today, a U.S.-led raid and firefight killed 9 people.